being born with a single mom in Mexico, I was kind of just pawned around with family and friends and not really being, I wasn't looked after very much.
You're listening to Scars We Share. I'm your host, Kayleen. How are you doing? Really? I honestly want to know. Comment on social media, join the Scars We Share Facebook group, send me a message. Just let me know how you're doing. For this episode, I got to speak with Karina. She's a delightful woman, and she talks about not really being watched over growing up. As she says it, she had a keeper growing up, but not really a mother. Here's Karina.
Hi, thank you for having me. Super, super, it'll be fun. It'll be open and just great. My name is Karina Pacific. I was born and raised in Mexico, and I have resided in Los Angeles for since 85.
Wow.
I'm a author, mother, friend, realtor in Los Angeles, and all that good stuff, all those things that we women do. You can find me at karinapacific.com for real estate in Los Angeles. But for the purpose of this, I did write a memoir about 3 years ago. It's called Choosing Magic, about a story of a fatherless girl with a broken heart who changed her story. And then somewhere along the way, Kayleen and I sort of met, you know, kind of connected, and here we are. So I'm super excited.
I know. I'm excited to talk to you. So how many kids do you have?
One.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, she's 20. I don't know why I lost count today. Somebody asked me during a meeting lunch today. She's 2021, like 2021. I don't know. I think she's 20 this year. It just goes too fast.
I love it. I like my kids are all young. Yeah. And so like I
how old are they? It's
7, 4, and 2 on Sunday.
You're in the
yeah
of it.
Yes. I am, yes. And so like it's easy to remember their ages right now because it's like, yeah. But I can
like what boy girls?
So the oldest is a boy, the middle is a girl, and the youngest is a boy.
Ooh, I want to hear about the girl 15, 20 years from now.
She's awesome. I'm really excited to see what she does, honestly. She is just, I love her. I love her. She's amazing.
Girls rock, and she's in the middle, so she gets the advantage of the boys on each side.
Yes. And yeah, she is one determined girl. Like, but she's also got this like soft sweetness to her, but like, yes, I am so excited to see what she does.
So exciting.
Yes. So you are a realtor. I have to ask because I'm in Utah and the housing around here is insane. Is it the same where you're at?
Insane how? Like, is it
like so many people? There aren't enough houses on the market. And so like things are so much more expensive than they normally would be just because there's so many people wanting houses and there's not enough.
So yes, that does apply to a lot of, so I live by the beach in Manhattan Beach, Redondo Beach, like just south of LAX, like when you guys travel to Los Angeles, just like a quick little 5-10 minutes south of LAX, which is a little area called South Bay. And this area really is like entry level here is $1.5 million.
Oh my gosh.
And some of the high end stuff is 15 million, 20 million.
Oh my gosh. That is just wow. Before we like jump in with the physical scar, I wanted to ask, and maybe this is going to be part of your story, but you said you grew up in Mexico.
Yes.
So when did you come to the States?
In 1985. So part of like the book, part of the story is that my never met my father. My mother and father met in Los Angeles. And I was procreated in Los Angeles. And I guess when I was born, 72, like 71, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they met here. And then they went to Mexico, or she went to Mexico, and he never showed up. And so she ended up staying in Mexico for support.
Yeah.
And then and ended up staying there for until 85 when she had the means and the ability to come back to America in 85. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So when I returned in 85, and I remember we came here, I remember it felt like home. And I think it was because I had been procreated here.
Yeah. You just kind of knew that that's where you were going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. It was weird. Yeah.
That's energetically. So crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So let's go ahead and jump in with a physical scar that you have.
So physical scar. So I guess I would say being born with a single mom in Mexico, I was kind of just pawned around with family and friends and not really being, I wasn't looked after very much. Yeah. I just was at people's houses and what she worked because she worked endlessly. And one of the houses I would end up at all the time was my aunt's house. And her daughters had a room where they would do hair. They would do hair in the house. And because I wasn't supervised, whenever they were not in the room, I would go in there and then cut my own hair or like play with the scissors. Mm-hmm. And I cut myself in here, and there's a scar in my head. So if you see the line in my head, it's really uneven. This never really has grown back. This little hair area.
So oh my gosh.
I know. So I guess I just put scissors to my head as I was trying to cut my hair.
Yeah.
And it's there. I don't mind the scar. It's just the fact that I don't have a nice hairline.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's crazy. I fortunately have not had my daughter do anything like that yet. But I'm just like waiting for the day when she tries to cut her hair and
hide the scissors. Yes.
They're up where she can't get them, and they're in like a child locked door. So
I mean, that's the mind of a curious child, right? You just never know where the curiosity is going to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? You're a mom and you're active and you're present, and I didn't have anybody around to sort of look after me and go, no, don't jump, or cross the street, or
yeah. It's just interesting different ways that people grow up and how things change throughout time, and just
I know, it's interesting. Yeah.
I know, but now I want to hear more. Like, now that you've told me more, I'm like, okay, I'm really wanting to know more. So let's move more to the internal scar.
Okay,
what internal scar are you willing to talk about?
So it's probably an extension of like having put scissors through my head, is that I was never really supervised or looked after. And my father still to this day don't know him. And then my mother, you know, she worked very hard. She did the best she could, but she was not your traditional mom. She was not emotionally or available or able. I don't know that she was mothered herself. So I essentially did not have a mother. I had a keeper per se. Yeah. Somebody to provide it, you know, shelter and food. So I didn't have that parented. I wasn't parented. So I had to learn a lot of those things. So, you know, the internal scar is, I've worked out a lot of this stuff. Before, it would have been abandonment, you know, or not having that been loved, but I don't have that as much anymore. Mm-hmm. It would be just to be fully sort of heard and understood, you know? And I think that's a very common trait in human beings. We all want to be essentially heard, seen. We want to be seen. We want to be understood. We want to be accepted. We want to be not judged.
Yeah.
So I think this, it's some of the combination of those, but I think I share those with every other human being.
Yeah.
We want to be touched. Mm-hmm. We want to be, you know, nurtured and know that we're safe. So,
Yeah, that would be so, like, so I have, like, I was raised by my mom and dad, by two parents.
Yeah.
And,
siblings?
Yes. I'm the youngest of six. Okay. So I had five siblings. So I definitely I had a relatively crazy household growing up when I was younger, but my parents weren't very emotionally available. I actually totally connect to the whole, like, they were more keepers. Mm-hmm. They provided, mm-hmm. But like, I never had a great relationship with them. Like, I had an okay relationship with them, but, and even to this day, like, I have an okay relationship with them, but it's not like I have this like great relationship where I have this huge need to talk to my parents on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have that at all.
Yeah, I completely feel you.
Yeah, I imagine so. So I'd love to like kind of hear you talk a little bit more about how you kind of went to place because your mom worked really hard to try to provide for you. So you went around lots of places. Like, what was that like?
Well, you know, so it was good, a lot of good, and there was a little bit of not so good. Like there was sexual abuse involved, because when you pond around with strangers, there's, you know, not everybody is good. These human beings, and they're going to take advantage of innocent child that, so I was sexually abused by my mother's best friend's husband. And because I mean, it typically with sexual abuse, it happens very close to home. Somebody very close, right? So it's very traditional. And so that was the bad part. And I knew within the child abuse and then how I was being raised, I knew there was something off. Like, I just thought, like, I remember at, you know, post sexual abuse, I just kind of, I was like young. I was like 9 years old. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. Like, there's something off about this. Like, my reality, my existence in this world right now in Mexico is off. Like, it doesn't seem that I was right. So, and then just years passed by, and we eventually made it to, but in before we came to America, during that 12 years in Mexico with the child abuse and everything, because I was alone a lot of the time and not a lot of direction, encouragement, and any of the parenting stuff, I was just open to just being curious. I had to be curious. I had to entertain myself. So being curious really served me a lot, because I learned a lot about the human spirit, the human nature, how what we do, and about other people, even my family, if they supported me or not, and strangers. So somewhere in my young years, I went to Catholic school, because in Mexico, you're fed Catholicism like it's rice and beans. Mm-hmm. It's part of your plate.
Yep.
And the priest and the nun there were just very loving and very kind. And they taught me really about love and order, discipline. I needed discipline, because every child needs discipline. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they gave me really hope and humility, which is really interesting. I always sort of spin it in my head, and interesting that obviously, sadly, the Catholic Church doesn't have a great rap for a bunch of little things there and the other, but they are the ones that kind of saved my soul. And but they still need a lot of fixing over there. But
So, I actually am curious. So are you still Catholic, or?
I'm Christian. I love God. That's really who saved me. Like, it became sort of my father. Like, I actually, thankfully, I kind of adopted him as a father and Mother Mary. I needed somebody to look after me. So I had sort of this, you know, the shoulder, the bad evil, the good evil, like something to hold me accountable, because I really didn't have any direction. So yes, I'm Christian first, you know. Mm-hmm. I do believe in that and that higher power. And they were ones that gave me a lot of hope and humility. And then that's kind of the kind of trajectory of what happened throughout my life. I started being attracted to goodness, because it showed me goodness and humanity. And I had a great godmother and godparent, and they were also lovely. So because it been so lonely and there was sexual abuse and abandoned, for some reason all that goodness really attracted me, and it gave me really a lot of great energy. Mm-hmm. And I just continued to crave it.
Yeah.
And just looked for it. Even though it was lonely, it just was more fun to lean into the goodness of life, because there is a lot of good humanity out there. You just have to not be afraid, even though scary, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I actually love that so much, and I appreciate that, because there's a lot of negativity. There's so much.
Yeah, too much.
Like, yes, like there's so much that like you can drown in all of the negativity, but it feels so much better to lean into the positive.
For sure.
Because there's so much positive too. There's so much.
Like just drowned down by the negativity.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just gets sort of covered up. So yeah, I think that was kind of like what the recipe that kind of carried me along my life, which is really, it pisses people off. I call it obnoxious positivity while still being a realist. You know, there's the reality that happens.
Yeah.
You have to be aware. You have to be aware of your surroundings, aware of the culture, environment, stuff. But you still have to choose the good of it all. There's still a lot of goodness, a lot of beauty. I mean, there's so much beauty out there, a lot of beautiful people, things, and places.
Yeah.
That I'm so attracted to that. I think I've become allergic to negativity. So then when my friends, close friends, will tell me something, I'll look at the upside very quickly. And I'm too fast for them. And I realized that I have to slow down and give them space in what they're sharing, which may not be so positive. They'll be like, oh God, I got into an accident, or, well, at least you have insurance and your body's intact. But I didn't give them space. So I have to give people space, right?
No, I totally get that. Cause like, I am a very positive person naturally. Yeah. Like I'm just a positive person. That's just kind of how I am.
I can
and
tell.
That's how I always am. I'm like, well, let's look at the positives. And I have had to work so hard on, instead of going right in with someone on the positive, just sit with it and be like, yeah, that would be really hard. And like allow them that space to be upset about it.
Right.
But I totally understand, because I immediately want to go to, oh yeah, you have insurance, you're okay.
Yeah.
And you're not like super physically hurt. Like I always want to go into that, but I have to be like, no, I'll let them be upset and validate. Yeah, that really sucks. That would be really hard. And give them that
space.
And then when they're ready for it, be like, oh, look at all of these wonderful things though.
Yeah.
Like I totally understand what you mean.
It's crazy. And it literally just happened with one of my best friends this weekend. She kind of sent me this not so good news about California, because California is a goofy place right now. And I'm like, well, happy Saturday. Okay. Like, I just didn't want to engage. And she called, she's like, Karina, this is our safety. You know, we have to really look out for ourselves now that this is happening in California. And I just said, okay. And so you have to live in reality. I said, well, you can live in reality. And then we had this story, like, I am not oblivious what's going on, but I can't fix that. So I'm going to choose to just the good.
Yeah.
You have to choose this part of the book, like choose the magic, be alert in what's going on, but don't like, you know, you can sink down into negative very quick. Right. Because what is that saying? Misery loves company.
Yes. 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 I think, and it's so easy to sink into. It's so easy to sink into the negativity. And like, there's a lot of really crappy things going on in the world right now, especially in the, like really in the US, there's a lot of really rough things going on, and it's very easy to get overwhelmed and just sucked into all of it. But I think that there is beauty in being able to say, I cannot change this part of things. I can only be in charge of myself and how I react to it. Like 100%. With all the COVID stuff, like I am taking it very seriously, because I got COVID in December and it was really rough, and I'm a long hauler. And so we're very careful with COVID stuff, and people around me are not. I'm in a state where people aren't taking it very seriously. And I do go through spells where I get really frustrated by it. But then most of the time I'm like, I don't have any ability to make them care. Yeah. That, like, I can't just wave my wand and make people care about other people. And I can't do that.
Yeah.
I can only be in charge of how I react to everything and how I take care of things. And I have to constantly remind myself of that. I'm like, I don't have any effect on that. I can only take care of me. And that's it. Like, I have to take care of me and my little family. Exactly. And if I'm doing that, then we're good. Then we're okay. And we can stay okay.
Yeah.
Yep. But I absolutely agree. Like, it's so easy to get stuck into that negativity. But yeah. You're only in charge of you and your actions and your reactions.
Thought. Something I'm right now, I'm practicing really training the thought process, not spinning things, in your head. It's just such a waste of time.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I always go back to, I actually created a journal for women. I'm still trying to figure out what exactly to call it. It's like a self-improvement, but also affirmation, positivity. I don't even know how to explain it, but I created this journal and you start and end the day with gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed such a big difference with me when I'm actually doing that, because when you start focusing on those good things, when you start focusing on those positive things, it's easier to see them.
And more positive and good things come along.
Yeah.
Come by. Yes.
Absolutely.
You can draw what you're spinning in your head.
Yep. Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
And that is the reason why after high school, which I was in here in Los Angeles, so I was 15, 16, no, I was 17, after high, 2 weeks after high school, for about a year during my senior year, I had orchestrated that I would have to leave my mother because she not only was not, a mother, she just was not equipped to take me into the next level of my life.
Yeah.
And she was also not the most positive person, a very victim-like, just very tough on herself, which then she would become tough on people. They could not, so it was just, I had to just go. I said, I see a bright. I always had this little shining light. I always, that little gut feeling, we all had that little thing, I'm supposed to do more. I'm supposed to be more. I'm supposed to move forward in this way. Just see it and just follow it. And I had to just jump that leap, and I left her and I just was on my own, like a little vagabond through Los Angeles until I found my way. Exploring, get curious. You learn so much by being curious.
What was that like? Just kind of, because in LA especially, that's a huge thing to just kind of go off on your own.
Well, I think, as you'll see, because you have teenagers at some point, I was a teenager. So when we're teenagers, we think we're we can do anything and nothing is going to get us, and we're invincible. And, it's just it's fearless. We can encapsulate that feeling they're teenagers when they know it all.
Yes.
Yes. Right.
Yes.
We are invincible. And you can't tell me different. And they're fearless. Yeah, I remember my daughter, she just was balls out. I am woman. Mm-hmm. That only happens during those teenage years, and then life happens, right?
Yes.
So that's what got me through. I used to rent rooms throughout LA or little motels. But it was fun. That's part of being a teenager.
Yeah. I guess, in that way, you just wouldn't have anything to pull you down. You wouldn't have anything keeping you anywhere. So you could just go wherever you felt like going.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Wow.
So I did. Yeah. And then here we are.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's so crazy. So do you still have a relationship with your mom?
Well, yeah, she's, I do. She went back to Mexico and she's older. But a relationship, I think, much like you and your mother, it's just because there are mothers. So we have to at least for me, keep in touch, make sure she's good. She has what she needs. Mm-hmm. But, we've never really had you and I, who we just met,
Yeah.
I've had more of a conversation than I've ever had with my mother. She's just not equipped to have that dialogue.
Yeah.
So it's just more, on the
just vague surface level.
Yeah,
surface level stuff. Yeah. No, that makes total sense. Like, I would never have a deep conversation with my mother.
I know. It was that, that time back in the day, I mean, just it seems to be that there was not a lot of dialogue back then. You just kind of came home after 5 o'clock when the lights were out, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. There are very few friends that I have where, like, their parents were just, like, stellar,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a few people that I know where they're, like, really close to their parents, but not a ton.
Not a ton.
Yeah, not a ton.
That's how we learn, I guess.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about that, like, because I don't want that for my kids. Like, I really want to have a really good, like, deep relationship with them. And, like, we start now. Like, we start young. We have really good conversations even now. I don't know. I don't, like, I've seen so many of my friends when they have kids, their mom comes to town to help them after they have a baby. Mm-hmm. And they're always posting on social media, like, oh my gosh, I don't know how I would have gotten through without my mom's help. And like all of these things. And that just was never really available to me because like my mom would go help my other siblings. But since we live in an apartment, there's not really a place for her to stay super easily with us. Like she could stay in the living room and like we could get a blow up. We could get an air mattress. Like we could make it work if she wanted to stay here, but she doesn't. She doesn't want to stay here. And so it's like, well, then how do you help with a baby if you're not willing to actually stay with the person who just had a baby? Like that's not really how it works. And so when like after our first, when we had our other two, we never asked my mom to come help. We asked like we flew out my brother-in-law one time so that he could come help. Aww. And like we had my sister-in-law come out and help with one of them. So like I've never went to my mom to help with things like that. And there was almost a sense of like sadness around that. Cause it's like, oh, I see my friends like having this wonderful help with their moms. And I like didn't even try because it wasn't worth it for me.
Yeah.
Anyway. So have you ever experienced that? Like, have you ever felt a little bit of like sadness around it or have you pretty well been able to just kind of keep it positive?
Every day. I would be not a human being if I didn't say that it's a bummer. I call it a bummer that you know, I don't have a father. And then and it's past even about me, more about my daughter not having a grandfather. Right. So then like, so it goes to like the next, who else is affected by this? It's a bummer that my mother was not able to grow. Like she probably went, you know, she was born and raised in Mexico, probably grade school education. It would manage to come to America several times legally, which is very hard.
Yeah.
Very hard to get that sort of process through. And, but emotionally she just didn't grow up. She didn't grow into a person that could have, you know, a conversation, an agreement to disagree. She's probably the most stubborn, hard-headed individual that I've met, just by fear. So it's a bummer. Like, I wish she would have grown emotionally so then she could have had love. She was never, you know, when you're kind of that guarded and that unavailable, you're not going to bring the good people to love you and help you in ways that we all need. And so she never really had, but like was truly loved. I mean, I don't know that she's going to find a love of her life by 83.
Yeah.
I have no idea. So, and I feel bad, like she's going to go to her coffin or however, you know, where she dies and not having been really felt like she was loved. And I wish that for every human being, we all want to be loved.
Yeah.
You don't want to be accepted and heard and all those things, right? And she just didn't grow up to, she didn't change. She chose not to change. So that's a bummer. This bums me out. But I'm glad that something kind of sparked in me along my journey to change the story. Yeah. So then I had to change me in a lot of the things, my patterns that were a result of that childhood. So then I could have somewhat of a long marriage and then raise a good child. I mean, she's a pretty stellar human being. I like her a lot. She likes me. And it changed the pattern. It changed the cycle.
Yeah.
And just raising her based on her needs and not my lack of, based on, what she, who she is as a child in that particular year, culture in our lives, not because of what I didn't get and all that good stuff.
Yeah. I think that is so important. Like raising your child on their needs.
Yes.
That is like the key. I think that like, that's the key, is raising them on their needs, and they're pretty good at letting you know what they are.
Yes. If you let them,
I've met
some parents that they get in the way.
Yeah.
They get in the way, and it's a bummer. It's a bummer to see. You can see when the mother or the parent, the father, is trying to project their stuff onto the child. And, they tell us who they are right away, and then life and people get in the way, right?
Yep.
But it sounds like you're doing the same. You're changing your story. You're doing it times three. I just had one.
Yes.
Good for you.
No, I totally get that though. Like, and we have neurodiverse children as well. So it's like they have different needs than I think about, and that I very different needs from what I had growing up. Like, obviously some of those needs are still the same, but they also have very different needs. And so we have to adjust our parenting to make sure that we fulfill their needs and not what. And yeah, well, I just think that there's so much to that. And like, it sounds simple. It's not. It sounds simple, but it can be.
It's like a daily mindset shift or readjustment, recalibration.
Yes. And daily. Absolutely. Daily. So two questions that I have. So you've mentioned that you're married. How long have you been married for?
Oh, too many years. Too many years. It's a lot to be. So 20 years.
20 years.
And great guy. And I think, sometimes we found each other to help each other in our own pain.
Yeah.
He also came with some pain, and then I came with some pain. Great guy, great father. And then sometimes we're always, at this point, we're like, we'll have to figure out where we go, because sometimes just like in friendships, you outgrow people. And, or sometimes you don't even outgrow people, you grow in different ways.
Yeah.
And if, as long as you're going up, then you can't fault people from going a different direction that serves them better. So it's been interesting. It's been interesting. Yeah. It's been fun. That's also another thing to learn, is I didn't have a father, exemplified good marriages. So I had to really maneuver how to nurture a husband, and how to also call, defend myself, or how to not defend myself, but also sort of, you know what I mean?
You have to stand up for yourself sometimes. Yeah. Like not in they're being horrible to you. Like, but you just have to be able to be like, no, this is what I need.
Yes. Yes. And just have I guess sort of have your needs met as well.
Yeah.
Especially when he didn't have a good woman role model. So I think God or, the universe, whoever it is for everybody out there, people come to our lives to kind of teach us something.
Yeah.
And we either resist or we go with it.
Yeah, absolutely. That made me think about, so I have a degree in theater. I love theater. And I love the musical Wicked. And one of my favorite songs in Wicked is For Good. And because I met you, I have been changed forever.
Aww.
And I love that line, because I think that that's really, it's honestly how it is. Like, whether someone comes into your life and is a positive or negative thing, they do change your life forever,
right,
by coming into your life. And yeah, I think there's often something behind it. Like there's something behind it all.
It is,
but it's really up to us on how we move forward with it all.
If we are open enough and we're reflective enough, we have to be reflective, yes, right? So like we turn the mirror around and actually go, Oh, I did this. Or you can just ignore it and be stubborn about your ways and, you know, do the same thing. But if you're reflective and open to learn about what the other person brought into your life, then you do learn. If not, you can just coast through life. I don't know.
No, I really do love that so much. Like, there's so much to, like, being able to look within yourself, because that's hard. It's hard to do that. And it can be really painful and tricky.
My mother did not do it. I have an example, and she's looking hard into her actions was very, very tough. I would say, like, I would tell her, you know, gosh, you know, that's not okay. Whatever it was, like, you want to talk about it, or, you know, what you said, and she'll just go, oh, look at that pretty house. She's such a deflector.
Yeah.
Couldn't possibly, like, spend a minute, or I don't know why, because maybe because when we're told something different than what we kind of did, it means it may feel like we did something wrong. People don't want to be wrong. I don't know. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think there's a myriad of reasons, but I do think that there are two things stick in my mind. One, we don't like to think that we're the bad guy.
Yeah. Okay.
We never want to think that we're the bad guy. And like, sometimes we're wrong.
Yeah.
Sometimes we inadvertently are the bad guy, and it's hard to see, to do. It's hard to deal with that. Yeah. It's painful and difficult to be like, oh, I actually did something wrong.
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing. And then the other is sometimes it's just painful. Like, even if you aren't like the bad guy or whatever, I'm using quotes. People won't be able to see that, but I'm using like air quotes. I'm like using quotes. So sometimes like you aren't the bad guy, but still like reflecting is painful because of just all of the stuff around it. Sometimes it just hurts to look within inside yourself. I like, those are the two biggest things that I find when I'm like, okay, I need to work through something, is it's one of those two things. Well, crap, I was the bad guy in this situation and I don't want to think myself that way, or this is too hard and I don't want to.
Right.
Yeah. And like, to me, those are the two biggest things that kind of prevent people from really delving in, but it's so worth it. Like, yes, it is hard and it's painful, but I think that in the long run, it's always so much more worth it to go through that. And in Brené Brown's words, embrace the suck.
Embrace. I love her. I love her. Did you read also Glennon Doyle?
Where is it? Are you talking about Untamed?
Have you read it?
I'm reading it right now.
Oh my God.
I'm reading it right now.
Great stuff in there.
I love it so much.
You know, I read her first book, Love Warrior.
I want to read that.
So I read it, and it was before I wrote my own memoir. And I read it because I forget. You got to read this book. And I love this friend. So I'm like, I'm going to read it and I read it. And I thought, I don't really understand this Glennon person. And it felt like something was off. Like I felt like there's something missing.
Mm-hmm.
And then comes to find out, I read later. I'm not going to tell you much about the story, but I'll tell you what she was going through during her launch of Love Warrior before I'm named. And don't quote me, it's just what I remember from reading.
Yeah.
That she was going through a divorce from her husband. I'm sure, I don't know if you know that. And then she just met her wife. And I thought, that's what's missing. It didn't feel 110% authentic. I don't, because she was going through this turmoil.
Yeah.
Right? Which is great. I mean, it's great because now she's found the love of her life and it's great. But it's so interesting that I kind of felt that. And now in this book, Untamed, it just landed like on the bricks because she was 100% authentic and raw. And I'm like, now you're you because you're happy, you're with the right person. Now you're settled.
Yes. Right? Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay. We're about out of time, but I actually love that this is where we are because I think it's so important. And you can call it your gut reaction. You can call it intuition. You can call it like someone, like a higher power speaking to you, whatever you want to call it. You have to trust that because it is telling you something.
It is.
Like how you felt like the way that you were growing up was off.
Yeah.
You just felt it. And there's so many times when stuff like that comes up in our lives where we're like, something feels off.
And can we just tell people to just sit with it? You don't have to fix it. You don't have to know it right away.
Mm-hmm.
Just sit with it, nurture it, pray about it, namaste about it, whatever it is you do, like, but continue to try and peel the onion of that until the truth comes out, until that message comes out. But don't ignore it. But don't try to fix it also.
Yeah.
Let it come through. But I think we get in trouble when we try and fix it or name it, right? But also don't ignore it. Because when I ignored it, it freaking pisses me off.
Yes.
Like I knew it and I ignored it and I didn't listen to me. And it pisses me off, but it also recharges me because it tells me that I'm still on, that gut feeling is still on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. We all have it. We all are phenomenal women. We all have it. We just have to listen to it more.
Yes.
It guides us, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I love it. Like, and that's the perfect way to talk about it is you can't ignore it, but you don't have to try to fix it. Like,
or name it.
Yeah. Just lean into it. Like, honestly, like that's really lean into it. And it'll figure it out. Like if you lean into it and just kind of like listen
and open your heart and open your mind to it and just kind of like, give me more.
Yeah.
I see it. I hear it. Give me more.
Yeah.
And it's going to come.
Yeah. Oh,
we
I love
women
that so
have
much.
That. We're very powerful with that. And I think we get in our way sometimes. I mean, I knew I do. And that's why I ignore it and then pisses me off. But yes.
Yeah. Yep.
This
oh my
great
gosh.
Great way to end it. You are so lovely. Thank you for doing this. This is wonderful.
Thank you. I have really enjoyed this. Seriously. Thank you so much for being on. I love being able to connect with you like this. This was so good.
And I love that you did this with, I know that your listeners can't see us, but to see you or to just to have like face-to-face conversations in general is one of my fave things, but particularly after COVID. So kudos to you, 3 kids and working and doing podcasts. Well done.
Thank you. Seriously, I appreciate that.
Thanks for listening. I really mean that. I appreciate you so much. It means so much to me that you listened in. These stories are beautiful, and this podcast has the potential to help a lot of people. So thank you for listening. Love to you. Check out the show notes at scarcewishare.com/podcast/episode 082. Till next week.